Welcome to the Family Alpha Podcast, a place where information is exchanged with the expectation that it is to be applied. I am your host, Hunter Drew, founder of thefamilyalpha.com, as well as co-founder of thefraternityofexcellence.com. Now let's dive into a discussion that can help you help yourself. Again, this is the Family Alpha Podcast. Now let's get to work. All right, welcome back to another episode on the Family Alpha Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter Drew. Today, I have an excellent guest lined up who's going to be talking about a recent adventure he went on with his family. A little unexpected, but definitely something that family men should be thinking about and taking away with the topic of home security. Today, I'm joined by Ryan Mickler, a man who we've done some work together on the Red Man Group. I've been following his podcast, but this is the first time we get some one-on-one. So Ryan, welcome to the show.
What's up, Hunter? Glad to be on, man. Looking forward to our conversation today.
That's going to be awesome. So recently I saw on, I think it was Instagram, a story you were sharing about how, you know, we're just going to dive right into it.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Somebody woke you up, I think it was at 4 a.m. What went down in the Mickler home recently?
Yeah, I mean, I laugh about it because fortunately everything turned out well, but my wife and I both woke up to some noise at our front door. It was like 2:45 in the morning. And, I mean, it was obvious that somebody was trying to get into our house. So I jumped out of bed. My wife grabbed her firearm. I grabbed my firearm. My dog, I have two dogs, but one of my dogs slept right through everything. The other dog, the better of the two dogs, obviously, got up and was on alert. Like, he was ready to go. I've got a German Shepherd, a 3-year-old German Shepherd. He's a great dog. We've got a security cameras. And so we pulled up the security camera and we saw this guy who was like visibly inebriated, trying to get into our house. And by the time that we had watched the video and grabbed our firearms and I went out of the room and just got on the alert, he had left the front door. We saw him actually leave the front door on the video camera. So I'm upstairs, and the way that our house is set up, I've got windows pretty much 360 degrees on the second floor. So I'm like going from window to window trying to find this guy, because I don't know who he is or what he's doing. Maybe he went around to the barn and trying to get in from the back. I don't know what he's doing. So I tried to track him down and couldn't track him down, couldn't find him. So I swing around back to the front. My dog's with me, well-trained dog. And so he's just stuck with me the entire time. And then I looked out the front window and I see this guy's vehicle out there. And it's far enough away where I can't make out whether or not he's in the vehicle or not. So by this time, my wife had called the police, and I'm amazed at their response time. I mean, they were there within 3 minutes, 2 minutes, maybe. I mean, it was quick. Come to find out, one of the police officers was just down at the convenience store on a quick break in the middle of the night, and he just popped up real quick. But he pulled up, another police officer came a couple of minutes later and tapped on his window. So he was in there and he was passed out. Long story short, they pulled him out of the vehicle. They questioned him for quite a while, pulled him out of the vehicle, and they had him do a field sobriety test. And it was actually kind of comical. It wasn't, you know, kind of scary. But they had him try to walk in a straight line. And I mean, he was tripping all over himself. He fell down in the snow a couple of times. Long story short, they arrested him, hauled him off. Several minutes later, maybe, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes later, the tow truck came, towed the vehicle out of our driveway, and, you know, threat neutralized. But, you know, it wakes you up, right? It startles you. You don't expect that to happen. It startles you. You want to make sure that the protocols you have in place are sufficient. And I realized, you know, we did some things right, and there was some area for improvement, which we'll be working on. But that was the, you said adventure. I don't know if I'd call it an adventure necessarily.
I wasn't sure. Like an incident, I guess, would be more accurate.
Yeah, incident would probably be better. Yeah, but that was the situation. And so, fortunately, like I said, everything turned out well. It went down without incident. And, I didn't go to sleep, I don't think, the rest of that night. My wife passed out pretty quickly, but I stayed on the alert. So that was it, man. That's how it went down.
You know, when I read this, I wanted to respond with something, but I wasn't sure how it would be taken. So being able to explain it might be a little bit better. But I was going to say, you know, something along the lines of, you know, moments like this, that was probably best case scenario for training evolution, you know, because now, you know, something bad didn't happen, but you're able to learn, hey, this is where, you know, we're weak. This is where we're strong. You know, probably the best way for that to have happened.
Yeah, I agree, because you can train and you can think about these scenarios and you can try to anticipate what could potentially go wrong. And all of that stuff is good. You should be doing those things. But until you're in a real situation, you don't really realize like where your inadequacies are. And this was a real life situation. Fortunately, we were probably under no threat. In fact, when the police officer came to my door, I invited him in and we were talking, and he had said that the guy gave him multiple different stories on who he was and where he was coming from and everything else. And he did say that he thought that our home was the church, which, you know, maybe if you're in as intoxicated as this guy was, maybe I could see that. We've got a big, big white house with a big white barn. There is a big church across the street from us, you know, so like I actually could see that. And as I shared this on Instagram and in our Facebook group, I had a bunch of guys say, well, he's probably just a drunk guy. I'm like, yeah, probably. But men don't prepare for like the best case scenario and then find themselves inadequate in the worst case scenario. We prepare and plan for worst case, hoping that it won't be that. And that fortunately was the situation we found ourselves in. So I feel like we reacted appropriately. Although, yeah, he was probably just drunk and there was no real threat, but you know, like, I don't know that. So we make sure we plan accordingly.
Exactly. And that's the thing. And that's actually why I wanted to talk to you, is the planning aspect of this. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of men, you know, family men, single men, but I more focus on the family side because they're probably established. You have to worry about other people. You know, right. There's a larger area to cover. So people have their homes, they're doing their 9 to 5, and nobody's thinking of, well, what if something were to happen? Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping, you know, those listening to this kind of start thinking, what if, you know, what if this happens? What if that happens? Not just, you know, what if a drunk guy comes to the house? What if it's a little bit worst case? What if somebody's trying to get, you know, what's inside, your valuables, you know, whatnot.
Right.
So as you went through, you know, and people, they do love to say, well, it's just this. Well, how do you know?
So, you don't know. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, right? So I could illustrate this scenario that went down and everybody could pick that apart and say, well, you know, this and this, it's kind of like football. You know, you look at the highlight reel or you're able to slow it down and you're like, well, this guy missed his block and this guy missed his route and this guy missed his, you know, his first assignment or his first pass option. It's like, well, that's easy to say when you're in the comfort of not being in that situation and also not being in the heat of the moment where there's emotions and we're tired and it's 2:45 and there's confusion and it's dark, you know? So when you start adding these real elements to it, it changes the dynamic, which is goes to your point about like real world scenarios and training. When you're training, whether it's martial arts or preparing for a speech or home defense, then you probably ought to make it as close to real life as you possibly can. And there's value in training that way.
And very few consider the adrenaline that's going on during this. Like yeah, during this whole you thing, you know, your hands are shaking a little bit. You're really focused. You know, things are happening. You've got to talk to your wife very right. clear while at the same time, very quickly.
Yeah. There's been studies that suggest that men generally tend to overestimate our abilities by about 40%. And that's in a perfect scenario. Now you add adrenaline, you add fear, and you add confusion and darkness and the element of surprise. And we continue to overestimate our abilities, which is probably some sort of like defense mechanism. I believe that you can't be successful without some sort of hope and optimism and maybe even ego a little bit in a healthy way. But it also sets you up for failure because you think you're going to be more adequately prepared than you are. There's a great quote by, I believe originally it was Archaeolocus, who said, we don't rise to the level of our expectations. We fall to the level of our training. And unfortunately, too many men have fallen because of or exposed themselves or their families or people they have a responsibility to protect because they've fallen to the level of their training, not their expectations.
And that's a solid quote, which goes very well with this next point I kind of wanted to ping you on, which was, you know, what was the alternative? So there are men, there are families who have suffered preventable pain, you know, entirely preventable situations due to lack of situational awareness, due mm-hmm. to lack of any preparation whatsoever. I mean, yeah. there are, and I don't understand it, but I kind of get, you know, there's a group that they don't believe in firearms. They think, you know, that's a tool of destruction. They don't want it in their homes. Very well. I understand, but you have to have something. You know, I disagree with that. I have firearms. I believe everybody should, and that would make a much safer country. But if that's your, you know, that's your angle, that's your stick, so be it. That doesn't mean that the bad guys won't have them. That doesn't mean that you don't need some other form of protection. And due to that mindset of, well, if I'm passive, other people will be passive. People have lost lives. People have suffered injuries, all entirely preventable. You know, and it's one of those things where you have to understand that just because you're a good person, we live in a world where there are not, you know, there are bad people. There is evil in the world, and you have to be prepared for it.
Yeah, I mean, here's how I look at it. How nice must it be to live in a perception of reality where you've never had to defend yourself in this sort of situation? Like, that's the luxury of modern times, that you have the luxury of actually thinking that. Like, oh, nothing will happen, because the odds are nothing will happen, which is good. That's a good thing. But you don't want to find yourself wanting should that situation arise. And, you know, you said something interesting, too, that stands out. You said, you know, you can't be a good person and hope that other people will be good. We have to distinguish between good and capable, or we could just make sure we understand and have a common agreement on what good means. Does good mean simply morality, like you're a nice person who lives in integrity? Or does good mean that not only are you moral, but you're also capable? Like, you have to have both components. Men specifically. Like, if you're just a nice dude, well, congratulations. Like, people kind of like you. You probably get friend zoned a lot. You probably get passed over for promotions, but man, people really enjoy your company. Or are you somebody who has a moral compass, who lives in integrity and honor and tries to do the right thing, and you're also highly capable, whether it's in your business or protecting your family or giving a speech or communicating with your wife, or the way that you perform intimately with her, the way you have conversations with your kids and engage them? Good is great, but when you start adding this element of capability, like David Gilmour says in his book, Manhood in the Making, and Jack Donovan, who you know as well, talks a lot about this, the distinction between being a good man and being good at being a man.
Right.
And I believe that both are important. Like, if think about it this way. If you have a man who is not moral, but very capable, these are the villains, right? These are the guys that take advantage of people, individuals, for their own gain. And then if you have a guy who's just moral but not capable, that's where you run into, like I said a minute ago, the nice guy who can't punch himself out of a wet paper bag.
And that's the bigger problem we're seeing is, well, you're a peaceful man. You're not a peaceful man. You're a weak man who's not capable of harming anybody. You right. have no being alternative. You're not choosing to be nice. Yeah. You have no exactly. alternative.
Exactly. Yeah. Being weak doesn't make you moral. And it's interesting because we see this a lot. Like, people believe that there's some sort of virtue in victimhood. And there isn't. There's virtue in getting yourself out of that situation, but there's no virtue in being a victim. And I'm not downplaying the tragedy of becoming a victim. I know that there's men and women who have been victims of physical, mental, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, all kinds of things. And I'm not downplaying their experience. I'm just saying there's no virtue in that alone. You being able to rise above it or keep yourself and others out of that situation is, in fact, virtuous.
And that last element, you know, keeping yourself out of that situation, you see a lot of fathers, you know, we're both going to be speaking at the Patriarch Convention coming up this spring. And a lot of what I really love about that, and I shared this with Tanner, is that those are our people, you know, like the family men, you know, those who we're speaking to.
Right.
But when we're speaking to them, it's not just that man. You know, when I see it, and likely when you see it as well, you also factor in that man has a wife, that man has children. So the lesson we're passing to them, they're passing on to their lineage. They're passing on to their entire clan.
Yeah.
So when you help this man understand, like, oh, wow, you know, I need to be strong, and that's how I will keep peace, by being capable of war.
Right.
You know, you see a lot of these kids who suffer from bullying, you know, well, you know, on YouTube, you see, I look at YouTube and there's kind of two populations I'm seeing. There's the group that, you know, a sucker punch comes out of nowhere. And I'm like, man, that really sucks. Like, there's just no preparation. Like, you're walking away and somebody hits you in the back of the head. Like, what could you have done? You know, then there's the other group that they provoke it. You see them walk right into it. And you're like, what are you doing, man? Like, the best fight is the one you don't have to throw a punch at all. You know, the best victory is the one where you get away.
For
and
sure.
It's, why didn't these dads teach these things? You know, why don't these men know to just get out of the situation? And it's because their heads are in the clouds and not here on Earth, where, you know, reality likes to exist.
Well, that's the problem with this whole utopian theory of the way that we live, is that if you put your head in the clouds and you begin to believe that everybody's good and nice and wonderful and all they need to do is be loved and hugged, then you expose yourself to blind spots that you would otherwise be very aware of. And it's not so that you're paranoid, right? Or become the jerk, you know, but man, I mean, you ought to be prepared and alert and awake and understand that, yes, the world is not as dangerous as it once was, but there's still threat. And you ought to be aware of that threat so that you can enjoy the time that we have here because you know you're adequately prepared to handle and deal with the threats.
It was Ryan Stone touched on something about this. He said he thinks it's the first time in human history where you have to intentionally feel discomfort. Like you have to go out of your way to feel pain today. Like you can go from climate controlled house, climate controlled car to your climate controlled job. And if you don't go to the gym, you don't, like with you with jujitsu, you are intentionally feeling pain, but you don't have to.
Right. Yeah. And nobody's forcing me to do that. Right. Like I get up voluntarily every morning at 5:20 and I go into the gym because like, that's what I want to do. But you know, this is the reason why people make up dumb shit to worry about. Like I heard or saw an article that there was a jogger and he was jogging in his neighborhood and he sent out an email. He was a vegan, which is fine. I mean, if that's your thing, but he sent out an email to his neighbors and said, if you're cooking meat, please close your windows because that the smell of cooking meat is offensive to me as I'm running. It's like, only in 2020 do we worry about this shit, right? Or somebody gets upset at the 16-year-old child who gets their order wrong at McDonald's or puts the wrong flavor in their mocha frappuccino. It's like, that's what you're worried about? Like, let's worry about some real shit instead of making up this dumb stuff to be worried about. And if you place yourself under voluntary hardship, like jujitsu or weight training, or whatever that you might be afraid of, then you're going to find that you're less likely to worry about dumb things that aren't worth spending any sort of mental energy on.
So speaking of real things, you mentioned, to kind of circle this back, that you were able to look through your security system to see this guy. So which means you had planned for this prior to it happening. So when you bought this house, I know you recently moved to Maine. Did it come with this system or did you install it?
No, we put it in. I mean, well, I should say there is a security system for break-ins, breaches of entry points, motion detectors, that sort of thing. So we made sure that we activated the system and then made sure that it was running the way that it should be. So we optimized it. Specifically with regards to the cameras, that's something that we installed. Like we put that on afterwards after we had got here.
No, that's perfect. And that goes back to the whole planning aspect. You know, if you had not taken that one step, well, now you've got to go to the door or if you got to look through the window, you have to bring yourself a step closer to the element of surprise or danger or harm.
Yeah. My job is, if we're talking about it from the perspective of home security, my job is to make it an unfair fight. Like this is my territory. This is home court advantage. So I need to put as many deterrence and defenses in place to make this an unwinnable situation for an individual who tried to take advantage of any potential vulnerabilities in my defense. I want an unfair fight and security cameras are part of that.
It's interesting. I use the analogy of it being the castle and I'm like, I damn near want a moat. I want there to be a drawbridge if I could do it.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. And I look at the things that we've put in place, and we can talk about some of those things. I'm not an expert, by the way, so put that disclaimer out there, but I know some stuff. But I look at what we've put in place as our protocols for home defense. It has two different categories. One is deterrence, so making it a target that seems like would be not an ideal situation to attack, right? So you have your deterrence. And then you have your defenses, which is actually like physically what is in place to ensure that if the deterrents don't work, that I can still defend myself and my family. So they fall into one of two camps. Security cameras, more of a defense strategy than a deterrent, especially if they're hidden or they're concealed, which they kind of should be. Otherwise, like, why would you let people know where all your security cameras are, right? So that falls in line with more of your defense strategy than your deterrent.
You know, you say you're not an expert, but still you're a man who successfully navigated this venture. You're a man with a family. And I think that's what other men want to hear. You know, you, and I think we had DM'd about this, you know, it'd be less technical and more real world practical. And that's kind of what I wanted to bring to the table for the guys listening or girls or whoever's listening.
Right.
Is that, you know, these are simple things that everybody can do. You don't need to be ex SWAT or ex FBI, CIA, you know, guru stud. Like you can just normal dudes. you got to defend your home. A recent thing.
You can put basic things in place that aren't going to be, you know, crazy or break the bank or, you know, get upset. You can just put simple things in place that will move the needle that much more.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. You know, I used to leave my Jeep unlocked because I didn't care. You know, my mm-hmm. house everything was fine. We live in a very, you know, quiet place. There's no crime, not much. There's nothing going on around where I'm at in Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. But then my wife said, you know, the house is locked up, but if somebody opened your Jeep, the garage door opener is there. And if you open the garage, now you have an access point. And I was like, wow, I had never thought of that, like from that second degree angle. So
yeah,
now we started locking the vehicle or taking the garage door opener out. It's little things like that people don't think of.
That's true. Yeah. It just takes a little bit of planning, a little bit of thought. You know, one of the things that I do if I'm trying to figure out, and this will fall in line with home defense or defense at your office, or even if you're out in public and you're just trying to be aware of what's going on and potential threats, is try to become the bad guy, right? So like if you were the bad guy, what would you do? So for example, if I wanted to kill a bunch of people, I would sneak into Disneyland and that's where I would do it. Right? Because nobody's expecting it. Nobody's been able to defend themselves because they've got metal detectors that catch all that stuff. So nobody has a firearm. Like that's where I would do it. Right. And I think about how I would do it. Now, some people say that's weird. That's creepy. Yeah, maybe, but also has a better likelihood of keeping me alive. Right. It keeping me protected because I anticipate what other people aren't willing to think about or discuss or ponder.
I think I've become somewhat jaded from online work because when I hear that, the first thing I'm thinking is like, we're going to say this and I fully get it. I call it the what if game, you know, like, hey babe, what if there was a fire here? What would you do? What if this happened? What would you do? And then like every scenario. So it's pretty much your version of playing the bad guy. You know, I'm like, well, but then there's the guys who will take this to the extreme because this is the online world. And they're like, well, I was watching Doomsday Preppers. I don't know if you've ever watched the show, but like the extreme they take these things to. I was telling my wife, I'm like, that's not what I consider prepping. Like that is so far, like down the line and so extreme. I'm like, that's, you can go somewhere in a store and not flip out if your back faces the exit, you know, like it's okay. Like obviously positioning yourself in a restaurant, I get it. But like being incapable of going on a trip to Disney because I heard Brian Mickler say that's a bad spot. Well, that's that. Don't fall into that mindset where you're like everywhere is a threat. Yeah. So therefore you're a hermit. You know, and your kids are a hermit and your wife is a hermit. You don't let anybody do anything. Like you have to balance situational awareness with, you know, just the basic steps. Like you were saying, the smallest steps put you like, they compound. They put you light years away from danger.
Right. Yeah. And don't go to Disneyland for different reasons, not because you think there's some sort of like active shooter threat, but like, I wouldn't advise going to Disneyland for other reasons.
So, coronavirus.
or just like it's miserable and there's lines and everybody's too close and nobody understands personal boundaries. I mean, there's like, I could come up with 1,000 reasons why I would not go to Disneyland, but I would in a heartbeat pack my kids up in the truck and we'd go up to the mountains for a week. You know, that's what I'd rather do, but well, teach their own.
So. No, I am with you. We recently came back, and this is totally off topic, but we recently came back from a snowboarding trip, and it was the best thing in the world.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
It was freaking awesome.
Where'd you guys go?
Mount Sunapee.
In Rhode Island or?
Newbury, New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Okay, cool. Yeah, awesome, man. It's beautiful up here.
Absolutely. So bring it back again. When you're working with your family, do you run any type of audits or any type of prepping, I guess, drills with them? You know, your wife, like you said she got up, grabbed her firearm. Is that something you'd rehearsed prior to?
I wouldn't say rehearse necessarily, but we definitely talk about it. We stage, like we know where things are. We've talked with the kids. We have plans and contingencies, in place. We know rally points, meeting points in our home, meeting points outside of the home. If there's like a fire, for example, in the home, these are all conversations that we have quite often.
And no, that it seems common, but I think there are people who don't even consider that. Like I think there are people out there probably listening to this now who don't even know if they have a fire extinguisher in their house.
Yeah, that's probably true. And not only that, but they don't talk with their families, right? Which is a problem. So we actually have a family meeting every single morning, And we're discussing what's going on today, what activities are coming up, who needs to drop who off where, what time do they need to be picked up, what do we have going on this weekend, is dad going to be out of town because he's on a business trip, is mom got her, you know, her night in class, whatever. We talk about all of this stuff. So naturally that creates an environment and an opportunity to occasionally talk about home safety and home security and natural disasters and fires in the home and active shooter situations. Like, it's just, it presents the environment to have these types of conversations. And so if you're not carving out time to have a family meeting, like, you do it in business, like, nobody thinks twice about it, right? Every day you've got meetings, and some of them are good and most of them are pointless, but you still do it every day. And yet you don't have the same type of meeting at home. I don't even care if it's done around the dinner table. If that's what time works for you, cool. Or if it works at 7 a.m., which is happens to work best for us, then that's great too. Just carve out time where you have the space and the environment to have these types of conversations and different ones as well. It's not always about this stuff.
I really like that. And so we do it at dinner time, and I'll ask them, you know, tell me three things about your day, and then what's the hardest thing about your day? And in there, you also get to learn a little bit about what's going on in your kids' world. Yeah. So if you were to talk to them about, let's say, a fire, or you're going to talk to them about gun safety, and all of a sudden your kid's like, oh yeah, well, this kid at school was talking about this. They go, like, oh, really? Or, you know, my teacher was teaching me about this. You kind of get to see these things, which it'll prevent you from being blindsided. You know, I didn't know you were learning all year long about, you know, in third grade about sex. Like, what? Like, how is that happening? But it's happening. Like, random weird things like that are going on. Parents are going to be able to find these things out a lot sooner and be able to take preventative measures, or corrective if necessary, you know, way before serious damage is done. If they simply ask their kids, hey, what'd you learn today?
Yeah, I like that second question. So what we do at the dinner table is, what was the favorite part of your day? So we focus on the positive. But I actually really like your, hey, what was the hardest part of the day? Because that actually gets into some real discussions. And that's something that we haven't asked, but I think we'll incorporate that starting tonight. I like that question a lot.
That's a good one. I've learned quite a bit from Tanner as well. You know, he's like, how did you do this? I'm like, man, you're like, that's brilliant. It's good to see you swapping notes.
Oh, for sure, man. We can all help each other out. I mean, that's the whole point of having these conversations and doing podcasts and having these conferences, is so we can assist each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you were talking earlier about not having to break the bank. Mm-hmm. What would you say are some very simple yet, or I guess simple and cheap measures people could start taking, like, today, like right now, after they listen to this podcast, like, all right, here I can buckle up my security. And, you know, like I said, it compounds. So
yeah.
This and this are going to put me 50 steps ahead of the bad guy.
For sure. So a couple of things that I would say is, number one, look at security cameras. Maybe not a security system, although I would recommend that, but security cameras at a minimum. And it's never been easier and less expensive. You can do Ring or Nest or Arlo. I think those are kind of like the top three, but there's 3 dozen different security cameras you can get. Even if you just put a camera on the doorbell, just so you can see, like, everybody has seen the videos, you know, of the FedEx guys like slamming the packages and people steals a package off of somebody's porch. Like, that's just a camera inside of your doorbell. That's all that is. So that's one quick and easy way to do it. Most people, I don't know if most people, but a lot of people, they already have dogs. So just get some training for your dog. Like, that'd be very helpful. I would recommend Mike Ritland's training. Trikos, T-R-I-K-O-S, or Team Dog Training. It's all by Mike Ritland. That's how we train both of our dogs. And we've got some highly trained dogs that listen, they're attentive, they're assertive, they do what they're told, and they're trained very well. What else? You can, firearms. I mean, again, most people probably have a firearm, I would assume. If not, like, you can get some very inexpensive firearms, even if you just have one. And just get some training, go down to the range and talk with an instructor there. I'm sure they've got somebody who gives instruction and different training on your firearms. So that would be a crucial way to do it. And then outside of that, just actually having a plan. And a plan costs nothing, right? Just a plan costs nothing. So having a conversation with your wife, if this happens, here's how we respond. You call the police, we grab our firearms, we secure the children, I get the dog. Like, you just go through the process, and you also include your children in on it. Too many people are afraid to have these conversations because they don't want to strip away their children's innocence. And I can certainly understand that. Like, it sucks, right? It sucks to have to have these types of conversations with your kids, but what's the alternative? Like, leaving them in this perpetual state of ignorance, that's silly, right? So we need to have the real conversations about drugs and pornography and sex and intruders in the house and all of this, everything. Everything we need to talk about. We should have these conversations. Money, religion, all of the things that people shy away from. You know, so there's 4 or 5 things right up front. I would also say is there's another great resource is Clint Emerson. he's a former Navy SEAL, 100 deadly skills is his kind of his niche. And he does one specifically or a section in that book, 100 deadly skills on home defense. So you can pick up that book and incorporate 2 dozen, 3 dozen different strategies. But one of the things that he points out is he says that there was some research done and some surveys of intruders and criminals, and they were asking these guys what would deter them from breaking into a house or making a house their target. And they said anything that would add an element of uncertainty, any variables in the equation. And they said, like what? And specifically there was 2, animals and children. Animals and children are unpredictable, right? And so these criminals, these would-be criminals, are looking at unpredictability as less than favorable. So if you have a dog, even if you have a sign out, right, that says beware of the dog, that is a deterrent. Or a sign on your door if you don't have a security system that says protected by Brinks or ADT or whatever your security system is, right? That's another deterrent. Even if you're lying, that's a deterrent. You just slap that thing on the window. Children, if they see a bike or, you know, children's toys, there's another uncertainty, unpredictability. So that's a deterrent. So these are little things that you can do that would deter somebody from even making your home a target.
I think the term I was thinking of while you were talking about that was show of force. You know, they're like, well, why do we have the white fleet cruise around, you know, the globe with the Navy? We're just showing all these other countries, look what we have.
Right.
We will wreck you. Do not mess with us. It's the same exact thing with your home. Like, I've got all these things. This is not the one, man. Go next door.
Right. Right.
Going down the road.
Yeah. I mean, there's those signs that say, you know, I'm a believer in the Second Amendment, and but my neighbor isn't. So it's like, I mean, not that you want to throw your neighbor under the bus necessarily, but you want your house to be the one that people don't want to mess with. And so you should have some show of force, even if you're bluffing a little bit, but you shouldn't bluff completely. Like, you should actually have some things in place. So you have some show of force, and then you have some tricks up your sleeve, right? That people don't know or aren't readily available or seen. You know, what's cool is even in a lot of these security cameras, in ours specifically, we use Arlo. There's actually an alarm on those security cameras. So if we need to hit the alarm, like, we can just press that button, and it's an audible alarm that basically tells a would-be intruder, we know you're here. People are on their way. Like, you better leave because this is activated and everybody's aware of what's going on right now. So there's little things you can put in place that, like I said, aren't going to break you.
I feel like I have to confess to a failure of mine. I've been suffering analysis paralysis with which one to get. So I've been looking at Ring, then I've been looking at Nest. It was like a month ago. I was like, hey, what are you guys into? And I got a bunch of responses, really good stuff. And I'm still like, I'll make a decision this week.
I mean, they're all so similar. You know, I don't know that one is necessarily like this much better than another. They probably have some small little nuanced differences, but for the most part, they're all very, very similar. And I don't think you can go wrong with any one of them.
Yeah, something's better than nothing.
Well, that's true too. Like, so how long do you put it off and then potentially expose yourself to something in the meantime, right? So something to be aware of.
What a regret that would be. And, you know, for anybody listening to this as well, what a regret it would be if you heard the information. Like, right now I'm discussing, you know, with you, home security. Somebody's listening to this thinking, same thing, let's prepare. And in the month it took you to make a decision, something happens.
Right.
You're like, man, like, I was sitting on my ass. You know, I was being lazy. I was just refusing to make it. I was being indecisive. And because of that, again, preventable loss, preventable harm, preventable pain.
Right. And you don't need to do this stuff all at once. Like, I'm not saying fortify your domain like a military base or Fort Knox or something. I'm just suggesting that you maybe incorporate something, you know, once per week, right? So like, family, this week or this month, we're really going to lock down our emergency preparedness plans. And in the meantime, we're going to be saving up for a security system or for security cameras. And then, you know, maybe in 2 months, then we'll get the training for the dog, you know? So you just gradually build these things into place, so you're not only breaking the bank, but you know, we have other things to worry about too, like family time and jobs and activities and things like that. So it's like, you can't like focus on this stuff to the point where you neglect all of your other responsibilities.
You had mentioned training earlier. I think that's an often overlooked aspect of this. People will think, oh, I buy the gun and now I have a gun and I'm good, I'll defend my home. Well, when's the last time we went to the range?
You know,
I've got peppers. My wife is a realtor and or a real estate agent, however, I don't even know which one term you use, but she goes out and sometimes she'll go to a home and there's random people checking it out, doing open houses and whatnot. And she has a pepper spray. mm-hmm. and things to where we've trained, hey, how do you use this? How does a latch work? Because again, if you don't train, you know, if you don't prepare, then you're preparing to fail. So yeah, with no her doubt. Not knowing how to use that, how to press the button, how to pull the latch, you know, whatever it is, you know, how that little system works, you know, she wouldn't be ready when the adrenaline kicks in, when something does happen. And again, if you don't train with your firearm, you're more of a liability to the family than the bad guy. You know, they might be coming in to rob you and you might accidentally shoot yourself in the leg.
Yeah. The training is actually more important than the tool. I heard a great quote. In fact, I had a gentleman by the name of John Lovell on. He runs Warrior Poet Society. And he said, you know, the firearm is not the weapon. You are the weapon. The firearm is simply the tool that the weapon uses. So you need to make yourself a weapon. The training is crucial. Now, the tools are important, but if I could only have one, you know, I would choose the training. That's going to make me much more effective in a broad array of circumstances and scenarios than the tool itself. So yeah, there's got to be a lot of emphasis placed on the training aspect of it. And then also being physically capable and prepared. Like if you're fat and you're overweight and you're out of shape and you know, you have sleep apnea because you're dealing with like health issues and weight issues, and you're not training, you're not boxing or doing some sort of martial arts or jiu-jitsu, like, man, what a low hanging fruit. And not only is that going to help you with the home defense stuff, it's going to help you in every facet of life. It's going to help you in your business. It's going to help you with a relationship. Your sex life is going to be better. You're going to be stronger. You're going to be more confident because you're looking better and you're feeling better. You're going to have more energy to pursue meaningful things. It's just better all the way around. So yeah, we might be addressing the home security stuff from this aspect, but making good decisions apply broadly, not just in this one factor of life that we may be dealing with.
You must have done at least one or two podcasts in your life, because the very last bullet point was physical fitness.
Is that right? Yeah.
So the last thing I wanted to talk was, you know, the fat prepper. You know, yeah. Like, man, it's such an oxymoron. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, these people that talk about discipline and like being prepared. I'm like, dude, you can't even keep yourself from eating a Burger King Whopper or the Impossible Burger or whatever it is now. It's like, how can you lecture me about being disciplined, right? It's like, be disciplined. Like, don't eat the burger. Like, don't eat so much. Exercise, get up, move your body. You know, it's just crucial. I don't know what else to say about it. Like, everybody knows they should be doing it. So like, just go do it.
I think it was 2 summers ago. It might've been 3 now. My son, we were fishing on some rocks and I was talking to him and my daughter was about 20 feet away from him. They're both just fishing. Mm-hmm. Everything's good to go, but it was low tide. So the water had receded a little bit and exposed. I don't know if you've ever seen like the algae that's on the rock after, yeah. You know, the way, all right. So
like slippery.
And yeah. It's like, yeah. Ice. So I look at my son. I'm like, hey, don't step over here. Like that's the only rule right now. Everything's safe. Everything's fine. Just don't step in that one spot.
And then like a moth to the flame, right?
Dude, I look to my daughter, I'm fixing her line or something. And I turn back and my kid's gone. Hmm. And he fell down the rock. He shot down another rock. The last thing I saw was him about 25 feet away from me and his face getting swallowed by a wave.
Oh, jeez.
Dude, it was go time. Like the waves were slamming him. I jumped, ran down, grabbed him. And I remember at one point I jumped in the water and I was holding onto the rock and these waves were wild, man. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking either we're both not coming out of this or we're both coming out of this. Like I accepted my fate that we're both going to drown.
The only thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. There was no alternative. And I was like, whatever. So I got him. I pulled him up. It was perfect. It was an accident. I wasn't even mad at him. I'm like, dude, it was just a mistake, you know, whatever. Right. But afterwards, when I reviewed, you know, kind of did a mental recap, if I wasn't physically capable of running down those rocks, grabbing him, like I had to do an overhead press basically from his butt to get him out of the water so he could grab some rock.
Right. If I couldn't in have the done water. That, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, dude, while I'm getting my ass kicked and I can't breathe.
Yeah. And you probably have no footing. Right. So, yeah.
So it's like, does he live that day? And I don't know. Like sometimes I'll play it off. And I'm like, oh, it wasn't that bad. But then I really think about like everything going on. I'm like, no, that was like really, really bad.
It could have gone south quickly.
Dude, exactly. Yeah. And
well, imagine if you couldn't even swim.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Physical fitness isn't just muscles and abs. Like there's a functional element to this, which goes beyond, you know, aesthetics.
Well, it's not only, I get what you're saying there. And it's not only that it's an element, like the functionality of it is the actual reason you should be doing it. There's another factor that's aesthetics, but that just happens over time and doing the right thing. Like just do what you're supposed to do and let the chips fall where they may. So getting fit for being fit is not the objective. You get fit so that you can function, so that if you get in a car wreck, you can lift the car hood off your wife, or that if your kid falls in the water, you can run down and dive in there and literally rescue your child from death. And also you'll happen to look good because you're fit and you take care of your body. So like, we want to make sure we get the priority straight. Being fit is so we can be fit and functional. The aesthetics will handle themselves.
And I think we can put that in the column of free. You know, well, you want to help defend your home and be better, do some push-ups, do some body squats,
do some push-ups, go run. Yeah. Do something, do burpees, right? Like anything, pick up something that's heavy. And I don't care if it's cans of fuel or these perfectly symmetrical balanced weights. Like, it doesn't matter. Just pick up heavy stuff, do it over and over again. And you're going to be better off than not doing that.
Absolutely. Ryan, thanks for coming on, man. I think we covered quite a bit with home security. You know, we really hit everything in the head. So fire extinguishers, guns, cameras, you know, there's a lot to it, many different ways people can go, but preparation and having the mindset to be prepared and to be aware, you know, start there. So if you're listening to this, there's no excuse. You've now been schooled by two dudes telling you, get yourself in order.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
For those listening, where can they find more? Order of Man, you know, your Instagram, where can we find more about Ryan Mickler?
Yeah. So orderman.com is our headquarters. If you're into podcasts, cause you're listening to this one. So Order of Man, wherever you're listening to the podcast, you'll find us. And then Instagram is probably where I'm most active, and that's at Ryan Mickler. My last name's MICHLER. And you'll find us between those three resources.
Awesome. Hey, thank you for your time. I'm glad we could link up.
Appreciate it, brother.
Looking forward to
our conversation. Yeah, we're coming up quick here, so I'm looking forward to getting together in person. The first conversation we had, I think we did over, you know, Twitter or something. Second one was over the phone. Third one, kind of a little bit more intimate, where we get to see each other now. And next time we meet up, we'll be in person. That'll be cool.
The evolution, I like it.
That's right, man.
All right, for everybody tuning in, especially the fathers, this spring, the 21 Convention Patriarchs, both Ryan and I will be speaking there. There is a link below. Come join us. It's for family men looking to become greater versions of themselves. Ryan, thanks again. To everybody tuning in, you guys have a good one.